No suicide. It's in your contract. You signed it.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 363, recorded on September 24th, 2014.
Welcome to the 363rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 196th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes an educational gaming flashback.
Let me ask you a question. Why did you stress 196 so much?
Because we are only four episodes away from episode 200.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering, you're going 196, like there's some special meaning. It's
196, we're just so close, I could taste it.
Yeah, I'm trying to get people.
By Halloween, we'll have hit 200. And now I feel like Bette Midler.
I'm trying to get people to come as guests on 200, so we'll see.
might we have surprises?
I hope so. So anyways, what have you been playing, Paul?
What have I been playing?
Besides the koi, I may have gotten employed, I may not have gotten employed game that you keep on playing with me.
Yes. Aside from whether or not I have a job. That's funny. What have I been playing? I think I have been...
Still playing that Fraction game?
You know what? I beat that Fraction game, and I'm very, very sad because there is no more content. I want more content in that Fraction game.
Well, isn't there more content in your food game?
Yeah, but I think game. I'm kind of over it.
Oh.
I think I've been kind of over that game ever since I had to give up my work computer.
Oh.
When the Olympic project didn't need me as much anymore.
Okay.
So my older computer doesn't run that game as well, which, I mean, hey.
What was your final hat then in this Fractions game?
Oh God, I don't remember.
Okay.
I could go looking it up.
I bet it was a beanie copter or something.
No, maybe it was an Indiana Jones hat? I don't know.
Fedora?
Maybe it was a fedora. I got to the end of it and it was really cute because the off-screen source of the heart in a cartoon word bubble that kept urging me forward turned out not to be from a love interest but from my offspring. It was so cute. I was very pleased to see the new take on an old trope.
Well, the thing is that game's for kids, isn't it? So they couldn't go with love interest to begin with.
Well, we're talking about a sprite of a woolly mammoth. So there could have been, with a fedora on his head, there could have been a sprite of another woolly mammoth with a bow on its head, and that would have been, you know, that's pretty much what I was expecting.
Oh, okay.
But instead, I showed up, and there were two tiny woolly mammoths that I then gave additional hats to, and we strolled off into the sunset. It was really cute.
Okay, and the other game that you might have played, since you keep on hinting around at it?
My Little Pony. I played some more My Little Pony. They got some neat new features. You know, it's all I could do to wait for the show to come back into season.
Mm. Okay, so I've been playing a little bit of Wasteland 2, but I won't discuss it much since that's one of the news items. I played a little bit of Destiny, and, you know, the thing is I don't have much time to play anything. I mean, at least Wasteland 2 is on my PC, so I can, you know, it's a little bit more accessible. I don't have to go through all the mysteries and boot up a console. You know, it can just be on my computer and just close it when I'm tired. You know,
I had the same issue. I had, you know, a personal educational project that I've embarked on. I'm outlining my second novel. It's just been a really busy week.
Oh, is this one going to involve gypsy Romanians again? Or
yes, wait, it's a sequel.
Roma. Wait, I forgot the proper term for them. Roma?
It depends on which nationality of group are you realistically speaking of.
Well,
it's kind of like they seem to have tribes in as much as like the indigenous peoples of America have different tribes that are kind of similar, but all kind of different.
Romani. That's right.
Yes. Mine, however, are magical, so I think I made up a name for them. I don't want to be offensive. I'm really writing characters that are a really romanticized fictional ideal, you know, in the same way that, like, I don't know, Stephen King may have when he wrote that old gypsy woman or old gypsy man in Thinner.
Let me ask you a question. Are you still sticking with the two male leads?
Yeah, sticking with the two male leads.
Okay.
It's a sequel.
Okay. Well, you know, you never know. It could be a generation later or something, you know?
It's the same characters. But if I do a jump like that.
Was it a fantasy?
Yes, it was a fantasy. Otherwise, why have magic gypsies?
Anyways, we're going to go straight to the gaming flashback. And this time I went with one of the pioneering coin-op arcade games. Tell me if you've played this, Paul. Scramble is the gaming flashback for this week. Scramble is a 1981 horizontally scrolling shoot-em-up arcade game. It was developed by Konami and manufactured and distributed by Lijak in Japan and Stern in North America. It was the first side-scrolling shooter with four scrolling and multiple distinct levels. For those of you who don't know, a side-scrolling shooter with four scrolling is when you're in this ship and the screen keeps on moving to your right, sort of like, I forgot the name of that game again that's most popular for it. Damn it, now I'm going to kill myself. It's,
Well, please don't do that. I don't want to do the show alone.
No, it's,
No suicide. It's in your contract. You signed it.
So it's sort of, you know, it's sort of like the game R-Type, except this one came before. The hardware uses two Z-Log Z80 microprocessors for the central processing unit, in addition to two A3-890-8910 sound chips for the sound. The player controls an aircraft, referred to the game as a jet, and has to guide it across a scrolling terrain, battling obstacles along the way. The ship is armed with a forward-firing weapon and bombs, and each weapon has its own button. The player must avoid colliding with the terrain and other enemies while simultaneously maintaining its limited fuel supply, which diminishes over time. More fuel can be acquired by destroying fuel tanks in the game. The game is divided into six sections, each with a different type of terrain and different obstacles. There is no intermission between each section, and the game simply scrolls onto the new terrain. Points are awarded based on the number of seconds being alive and on destroying enemies and fuel tanks. In the final section, the player must destroy a quote-unquote base. Once this has been accomplished, a flag denoting a completed mission is posted at the bottom right of the screen. The game then continues by returning to the first section once more with a slight increase in difficulty. We know this very well. You know, it's wash, rinse, and repeat, except different until you die. Scramble was critically acclaimed in its time. In 1982, Arcade Express gave the dedicated Tomytronic version of the game a 9 out of 10 score, describing it as an engrossing game that rates as one of the year's best so far. I'm guessing the Tomytronic was one of those electronic LED games. Do you remember those? Which just have little flashing lights.
Yes.
The direct sequel to Scramble is a helicopter arcade game. And tell me if you know this game, Super Cobra. Unlike Scramble, Super Cobra was widely ported to video game systems and home computers of the time. I remember that Super Cobra was one of the best games on the original NES.
It was on the NES, and if my dusty memory serves, it was there was a boat level.
Scramble made the list of top 100 arcade games in the Guinness World Records Gamers Edition. I remember this game, but mostly, I never really played it in the arcades. I did play it on the NES, though. I think a lot of people did, because I think it was one of the first games that you could get, along with Donkey Kong and all that stuff.
Well, never having been an early adapter.
I don't mean Scramble. I mean Super Cobra.
No, I didn't play Super Cobra either. And arcades were, unfortunately, a little bit before my time.
By the 1990s, they were dominated by Street Fighter and other fighting games, basically.
Yeah, I mean that was a little bit before my time. But you know, not being one of the more influential games of its generation, like Space Invaders or Pac-Man, I didn't get the opportunity to study it in my master's work.
Yeah, there was a ColecoVision game called Cosmic Avenger, which is very much like Scramble. It was also an arcade game, but it, you know, And Cosmic Avenger was a game I played endlessly on the ColecoVision. And it was basically...
You say Cosmic Avenger, and yet in my head, I hear the theme song for Toxic Avenger.
Well...
I just want to point that out there.
You know, Troma is only 10 blocks away from me.
I don't even know that reference.
Troma's the producers of Toxic Avenger, among other schlock movies like Surf Nazis Must Die.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, Paul.
Apple fans report iPhone 6 bending in pockets, and this comes to us from Independent UK. In what's already being dubbed Bendgate, owners of Apple's new iPhone 6 Plus are reporting that their new smartphones are being bent out of shape just from being carried around in their pockets. Apple has yet to respond to the issue, but numerous pictures of unintentionally curved iPhones have been circulating on Twitter, with one intrepid YouTube user by the name of Unbox Therapy even sacrificing his handset to prove that, yes, the iPhone 6 Plus does indeed bend. It's thought that the issue is simply because the 6 Plus is so much larger and thinner than previous phones that the aluminum case simply doesn't have enough strength proportional to its length. The trend was first picked up by the specialist site MacRumors, who reported to one reader's tale of bending his iPhone 6 after putting it in his front pocket to attend a wedding. Quote, the 6 Plus was about 18 hours in my pocket while sitting mostly, and said the irate Apple customer, as I lay it on the coffee table and sat down on the couch to relax from the drive, yes, sitting again, I saw the reflection in the window on the iPhone's slightly distorted area. For anyone who remembers the iPhone 4, Bendgate will also be sadly familiar. The 2010 iPhone didn't bend, but it did ship with flawed antenna that meant it dropped calls when owners held it a certain way. Critics would say in an absurdly normal way. Steve Jobs himself was forced to respond to the accusations by mocking the media and claiming that there was no real problem, but Apple eventually issued free cases to those affected. Will they do the same for the iPhone 6 Plus? In related news, following the release of iOS 8.01 this morning, oh, there's a new one, thank freaking God.
Don't download it.
Oh, okay. iOS 8.0.1 this morning, numbers of users found that their cellular service was disabled, reporting, quote, no service messages after updating. Affected users also appear to be experiencing problems with the Touch ID, which seems to be completely non-functional. Jesus Christ. It appears that the issue is limited to users who have an iPhone 6 or an iPhone 6 Plus, but affected devices span several carriers, including AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and Sprint in the United States. Rogers subscribers in Canada have reported issues, as have EE subscribers in the UK and Vitaphone subscribers in Germany. Restarting the iPhone 6 or 6 Plus does not fix cellular functionality, nor does attempting to use reset network settings, but some users have reported that restoring iOS 8.0.1 via iTunes or doing the initial install from iTunes fixes the cellular connection issues.
Yeah. So I didn't own an iPhone 4. I'm pretty sure Jordan would have a lot more to say about this because he had to deal with that issue.
I mean, this is exactly why I am not an early adopter of anything. Yeah. I mean, had I stuck to my rules, you know, I would not be in the annoying position of having to spend an entire evening downgrading my 4S's operating system, which I now have to do. I mean, iOS 8 is just not – it has in no way improved my experience on my phone. In no way.
Well, according to this, the patch is only affecting iPhone 6 or iPhone 6
That's
Plus.
That's not true, though. It might be in that one particular case, but I have noticed that every single thing that I have tried to do on my phone since updating my operating system has taken longer. My apps are freezing, and I just want to go back to the old one. And the fact that I have to go looking up instructions on how to do this online is kind of ridiculous from a customer service standpoint. There should be a button on my phone that says revert to last good operating system.
Wait, you have an iPhone 4?
I have a 4S.
Oh, okay. Because the thing is, I noticed that my iPod Touch got slower and slower as subsequent iterations of the iOS went, you know, when,
right, and that's that the force. Sort of, that's, like, that's the force you to buy a newer model. And you know what? I'm not going to buy a newer model because of the freaking bending issue. Why would I? Why would I be an early adapter for a company who has consistently shown that their early adapters get screwed?
Well, I had an I know that because I had the original iPod, by the way.
And, but you know what? But those early adapters, they don't care.
I had to return that thing.
And they have the extra money to spend. It's so irritating.
I had to return because, you know, I think it was like one out of every two original iPods broke down, you know. But I own a Galaxy S5, and it's just as big as the iPhone 6, right? But, you know, it doesn't have that problem. And I'm just wondering if Apple cut back on materials.
Of course they did.
You know? And the thing is,
I mean, it's the same thing that I saw in 2020 a week or two ago. It's, you know, the biggest company here in America that makes the highway guide rails decided to use 1 inch less of, you know, metal because it's expensive and, you know, they could save $2 per guardrail. You know, and now because they're skimping on metal, their products are defective and are killing people. And while it's not as serious here, I wouldn't at all be surprised to learn that there's less raw material in the new generation of iPhones.
You know, I would laugh if Apple's advice is, well, just don't put the phone in your pocket.
Of course, that's what it's going to be. Here, buy one of our approved shape-keeping hip holsters to put on your belt.
Yeah, I mean, or, you know, I did buy for my Galaxy S5 an expensive, it's not a case. You know, one of those things that open up like a book, you know, I'm not quite sure.
A case.
What? No, it's not a case.
That's a case. That's just a case with a fold in it.
You know, or something like, you know, where you open it up, you know, so it's not like it's enclosed. It just has a front and a back, you know. So I guess that would be my advice is just, you know, invest in case. Besides which, we all know that no matter what, you know, I haven't had it in years, and now I just jinxed myself. But, you know, I haven't had my screen crack in years now. And partly because I'm careful, but also I get one of those book-like cases that, you know, the screen is never exposed. You know, I don't have to get that. Those cheap, I hate them. You know, those clear things that you spread across the front of your phone. I can never do it without having air bubbles or creases. You know.
You know what? I've never needed to use one of those.
But I'm just saying.
I mean, I'm on my original iPhone, but never needed it.
Yeah. Have you had your iPhone screen crack?
Nope.
Okay. So.
I have dropped it a number of times though, but I got this neat little. A case for like $5.
That's what I love
about being one of the end adopters because not only has my 4S been, you know, completely perfected before, you know, in as far as manufacturing and other, like, I've had no problems with it because it was towards the end of the generation. You know, all of the stuff was cheaper. And if I'm not mistaken, the 5 had already come out when I bought my 4S. Like, I was one of the last people to buy one.
I've had two iPads, the iPad 1 and the iPad Air, and I'm proud to say I've never had any of those crack their screens either.
Right.
And those things are just one big, large plane of glass, to tell you the truth.
I mean, to quote Tyler Durden, we work jobs we hate so we can buy shit we don't need.
That's what George Carlin said. I wonder if he stole from. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Titan cancellation may have cost Blizzard more than $50 million. And this comes to us from PC Gamer. Industry analyst says the decision to pull the plug on Titan cost Blizzard a lot more than just 7 years of time. Now, by the way, the article doesn't discuss what Titan is. Project Titan was the MMO that they were working on. That would be sort of not a successor to World of Warcraft, but sort of like a new one, and it would be more family friendly or at least accessible. So it's sort of going to be like their MMO for families, I guess.
Like they were going to try to compete with Wizards 101,
something like that. Anyway.
Okay.
It was also going to be free to play. Just yeah.
Okay.
The studio. Hold. Oh, there we are.
I'm sorry about that. Apparently, whenever I get a phone call, it automatically pauses my Skype.
Uh-huh. Anyways, the studio may have sunk $50 million or more into its development before finally deciding that it simply wasn't going to work. But in spite of that eye-popping price tag, the consensus is that they didn't really have much of a choice. Blizzard CEO Mike Morhaime said yesterday that despite putting the better part of a decade into Titan, it, quote-unquote, didn't find the fun in the game and was eventually led to the decision to kill the project completely. It was a, quote-unquote, excruciating decision, Blizzard's Chris Madsen added, and probably not just because it represented the end of a long and ultimately unfulfilled creative endeavor. Industry analyst Billy Pigeon, I love that name, estimated that the development cost of Titan may have topped $50 million, while Michael Pachter of Wedbush Security went even higher. My guess is 100 to 200 people at $100,000 per year, so 70 to 140 million sunk the cost, he told Games Industry International. It's pretty sad that it took so long to figure out how bad the game was. I expect them to go back to the drawing board. Another analyst, David Cole of DFC Intelligence, said that the decision was likely prompted by the need for a subscription-based MMO to be, quote-unquote, out of this world unbelievable in order to succeed in a market dominated by free-to-play games, which includes Blizzard's own Hearthstone. I'm expecting to see them continue the focus on high-quality products, but also focus on products with shorter development cycles and less cost, he said. The market is just not a place where you can have games with a 7-plus-year development. It's changing too fast. Blizzard, of course, is one of the few game companies in a world that can absorb that kind of hit, and it is not a complete loss. Pigeon noted that the benefits of the Titan experience, quote-unquote, can include invaluable training, IP, and technology that can be applied to other games. Even more interesting, from the perspective of gamers, a Blizzard-connected source told Kotaku that a good handful of the Titan development team is still together despite the game's cancellation. Now, I know you're going to probably have plenty to say about this, Paul.
Of course.
Yeah. Before you do, you know, I will say the obvious that, you know, there is no bad thing if you can take away a lesson from this. And it sounds like Blizzard may have taken away a lesson from this.
But that seems like one awfully expensive lesson. I mean, I take issue with some of the copy here. Like, I don't care what company you are. If you lose $50 billion...
That's not $50 billion. Come on. $50
million. If you lose $50 million, that's a lot of money. Like, someone's going to be pissed off about that.
You know what, Bo? They make that in almost no... Because of World of War... You know, World of Warcraft prints money. So they were able to absorb that loss.
Yeah, but not in as high quality... high quantities as it used to.
But I'm pretty sure you took notice of the fact that the Titan development team, that you know, a good chunk of it is still together.
So, oh yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
So I'm guessing that this team is going to work on another game, and it's probably, you know, they're probably going to. I'm pretty sure that they're going to take the assets that they got from this game, and you know, and use it in a different way so that it isn't a complete loss. So, Paul? Hello? Okay, there you are.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, and I really think that part of the problem here was the length of the development cycle. We live in a world where, I mean, think of the gadgets that you had in your hand 7 years ago. Like, what did we have? iPhone 1?
They said 10 years ago. So but, 2004. But say seven,
like, let's look at what technology was doing 7 years ago.
In 2007. Right.
Right. So, I mean, what were we on? Like, the iPhone 2?
We were on the first iPhone, I think.
Oh, so the iPhone 1. So, basically... They've been working on something that should be playable on like an iPhone 3, and I don't think that's going to meet the minimum market expectation of today's gamer because our technology improves too quickly.
Hmm.
If it takes you 7 years to get a program out, you've lost your platform.
Well, I mean, there are certain exceptions like Half-Life 2, and Half-Life for that matter.
And I don't know. It just sounds like issues with project management. Because it shouldn't take that long to get out a minimally viable product.
But you know what? Give them credit. You know, when they realized that, you know, there was a lot of people who would have forced a game that wasn't fun, you know, and they decided, you know what? It's not working out. We're going to have to cut the cord here.
Well, you know what? Good for them in preserving their brand identity as a company.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, it sounds like a... production issue that this went on so long and a design issue that there was not a core experience that was released to the marketplace 4 years ago.
You know what I think happened is that whatever they were making, someone else already made. And they said, oh, you know what? We can't do this because someone already did it.
Yeah, I mean, plus it's not really a smart business decision just to try to enter this kind of a space anymore. Had they been able to do it 6-5 years ago.
Well, they do have some experience with MMOs. I mean,
right, but the MMO space is shrinking.
I don't think they weren't expecting to go 7-10 years. They were
right.
They were expecting to go 2 or 3 years, you know, and it just seemed like whatever they were trying, the thing is, I'm guessing they're trying something incredibly innovative and they just can make it work.
Right, but there comes a point where it stops being innovative.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, if you're talking about a lifestyle, if you're talking about a set.
And you got cut off again. Oh, I don't know what's wrong with your phone, but you're getting cut off a lot. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, there you are. Okay, go ahead.
I forgot what I was saying, but I mean, a seven-year life cycle is ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Wasteland 2 earns $1.5 million in revenue in 4 days, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. In Exile Entertainment's Wasteland 2 has earned $1.5 million in revenue, achieved in sales in only 4 days on Steam. Wasteland 2 is available through GOG.com and several other retailers. In Exile's belated RPG sequel was also warmly received by critics, with its collective scores averaging at 80 on Metacritic. Quote, "We are ecstatic that the style of game we love so much has been embraced so well," said In Exile founder and CEO Brian Fargo in a statement. All in all, this is a good result for In Exile, which raised a significant chunk of Wasteland 2's development budget through Kickstarter, just over $3 million in total, eclipsing the initial target of $900,000.
I will say that I was one of the backers, and I backed it with $50, and I backed it.
Did you get your free copy?
I have it on Steam. My backing was for a physical copy of the game, and I'm waiting for that to arrive. But I'm playing the game.
Oh, good.
And the thing is, the reason why, because it comes with a map and all the feelies that you would expect from, you know, from a game. And I will say, you know, it's good but frustrating. Mm-hmm. I'm learning very quickly that ammo is extremely scarce, and in one fight, I had to resort to one of my guys punching someone to death because he didn't have any ammo left.
maybe it's not the fault of the ammo. Maybe your eyesight's just going. You need to moderate that difficulty down, bro.
I did. It's on the least difficulty. I mean, I was playing on normal difficulty, and the giant frog just killed
me. Nah. I think you might need to go easy. You sound like you got to go down there. I got whacked by a giant frog.
You know,
dude, your reaction times aren't not what they used to be, old man.
Turn-based game. Come on.
I'm just teasing.
Anyways, so, you know, with all the Kickstarter disasters we've been hearing.
It's so nice to hear somebody developing a game that they started on Kickstarter. Like, it's so, like, yay, good for you.
You know, and they raised $3 million to develop it, and they're making $1.5 million so far. And, you know, it makes me feel a little better because, you know, there's been a lot of bad stuff going on with Kickstarter lately, with, you know, either people are scamming or they need more money to finish the game because the amount they raised wasn't enough, that sort of thing.
This brings my off the top of my head knowledge on successful Kickstarter games count up to one.
Well, it depends on what you consider. I mean, I got a lot of stuff from Kickstarter. I mean, I still have that Drag Queen board game, you know.
Of course you do.
That I've been meaning to tell you about or show you. I've been playing, and, you know, it's pretty well put together, despite getting killed by a giant frog. I mean, I haven't had much time.
Would you rather get killed by a giant spider?
I just don't want to get killed by a giant anything. I mean, you know, it's like, and when I started facing human opponents, they were easy in comparison because, you know, two shots from a gun, they're down. But this frog just kept on taking bullets, 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 bullets. I had to reload and resave to prevent team wipes, you know? Anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul. Oh, wait, no, it's me. Microsoft mistakenly affirms that Windows 9 will be revealed next week. And this comes to us from Ars Technica. Next week, Microsoft is having an event in San Francisco. The official purpose of this event is to, quote-unquote, show off what's next for Windows and the enterprise. That's a little vague. It could mean a new window of new version of Windows or a new update or anything in between. But Alan Crozier, president of Microsoft France, told employees earlier this week that Windows 9 was going to be shown off at the event as spotted by ZDNet France. But it turns out that wasn't suitably on message. Microsoft PR got in touch with ZDNet to tell them that the next window of, version of Windows doesn't actually have a name, so it's not Windows 9 at all. Unless, of course, it is. We've seen this before. Back when he was CEO, Steve Ballmer accidentally announced Windows 8's name and 2012 availability, only for PR to leap into action and dismiss Ballmer's claims as quote-unquote misstatements. Misstatements that just happen to be completely accurate. So I will say this. There's been evidence that Microsoft is trying to bury Windows 8. That they're trying to make it as if it never existed. Sort of like what...
Yeah, it's not the first time they've done that, though. Do we remember Vista?
Yeah. Well, they couldn't do that, but I remember they made Windows Me, you know, or ME, you know, Millennial.
Oh, the Millennial Edition. Yeah, that didn't work either.
Yeah.
See, this is why I don't upgrade my stuff. They keep making crap.
Well, no, I mean, but the thing is, in between that, they've done great stuff. Windows XP, Windows 7, sort of like they, you know, I guess Windows 9 will be good since they've been alternating between bad and good, bad and good, bad and good.
You will pry my XP out of my cold, dead hands.
Well, until the software says, nah, sorry, we don't support XP anymore.
Everything supports XP. Everything, everybody except Microsoft.
But the thing about Windows 8 was that it was really just an OS for mobile devices. You know, I mean, that the Metro face design, it was very iPod-like. You know, it's okay for my touch laptop, but it's not okay for a desktop, you know? And people
And you know what? That's the exact same reaction that I had to, you know, Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition. Like, they were just making that so they could have a rule set for their online game.
You know,
totally, it just sucks.
Everybody's swearing up and down that the new Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition is perfect. I haven't seen it yet, but, you know.
Well, not being with my home cell, you know, back in New York, I've only heard specious things, but
you don't do pen and paper anymore because you're in LA?
Well, I need to find people who I trust. I don't trust any of these people out here to have my back when it comes to giant spiders.
See, this is why you need me to move to LA so that you can have someone DMing.
I didn't say I trust you either, biatch.
What makes you trust someone in D&D then?
I don't know. I just kind of feel like you'd be rolling a lot of ones.
Wait, but the DM, the DM rolling ones isn't going to be bad for you.
Who said I would live in your world? That's awfully assumptive of you.
I'm going to tell you something. I made a few modules in my day that everybody loved.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually got to resurrect those.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Cobalt Cove. I basically did it for level 1 to 5 players, you know, because I was more interested in having people, you know, who are just starting out have nice little modules to deal with. So, I mean, wait, that's presumptive of me. Which did you prefer being, a DM or a player?
It depends on who's DMing.
I'm asking you, do you prefer to DM or to play?
I kind of liked it the way we had it set up in my home group because, you know, so, like, when one person's season reached in a satisfying place to hold off, then, you know, somebody else's show would start.
Wow. So you actually treated your AD&D sessions like lost, huh?
No, not at all. But like when the world was saved in Tony Hansen's, you know, plot line, then somebody else's turn would go, like Joe Perry. And, he would start off, and we'd travel to Joe's TV show for a season.
Oh, but what I mean is, but didn't you have a steady DM then?
No, we took turns.
Okay, so just one character would bow out, and you know the others would.
No. You are misunderstanding. We would change the channel and watch a different show.
Yeah, but
altogether.
Oh, okay. Okay, so, I still haven't seen really the contents of D&D fifth edition. So, but you know, it'll be interesting to see what Windows 9, what the big thing about Windows 9 is going to be. Like I said, Windows 8 is okay for tablets. It's not okay for desktops. So, anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Paul.
Feedback. From Alpishart. Great episode of Politicast. Politicast. It's a joke Dan Q would get. Well, since Dan's here, I'm sure he's laughing his ass off.
I think he listens to the podcast.
Oh, hi, Dan! Could Dan be one of those surprises for episode 200? Tune in and see. Ba-ba-bum! At Microsoft buying Mojang, it seems to have happened or at least gotten confirmation since I made the comment, blah, blah, blah. I remember having similar reactions to Disney buying Marvel. All our characters are going to be ruined and Disney-fied. From what I've seen, they seem to be doing the you do your thing and just make us money play. Microsoft has confirmed money making the game. So they have a cash cow. Why kill it? One of my friends has suggested that Notch should just have released the source code of the game to the public and turn profits over to charity. Yeah. My thought was that this might be morally right for Notch, but then puts all of Mojang out of a job, which to me is worse than, quote, selling out. I have no doubt in my mind. Well, yeah, it also means that the game dies if there's nobody left to work on it. Hmm. So it's just that, like, that's all you're ever going
to
get.
You know, he should give the charity to the charity of himself first. Hmm.
I have no doubt in my mind that Marcus cares very much for his Mojang staff and has ensured their continuance to work in this deal with Microsoft. I think that Jeb, DeBrone, and the rest are very passionate about Minecraft and want to continue its development. Speaking of passionate, Phil Spencer put on a Minecraft theme on his Twitter page. Probably a PR thing, but I'd like to think that he's really into Minecraft. He's also stated on Twitter that the YouTubers doing videos of Minecraft will be allowed to continue doing what they are doing. I also know that the feature updates will continue as well. He has released a video that stated how important and valued their audience is for the game and that they will listen to said audience. So I'd like to think he really does care about the game and its audience, and it's not just the dollar signs. The thing, though, that I'd like to ask you guys about is people are connected with about mods and are concerned about mods and if the game will switch to different programming code than the current Java-based one. Will it switch from the current Java-based code now? People feel if it switches to C++, they won't be able to do their tutorial conversions of the game. It's a minor thing to me, but I know it's a major thing to others. Minecraft doesn't seem too against modding in general, since I can find mods for Halo and Fable.
Microsoft doesn't seem, not Minecraft. But I seriously doubt they're going to change the language of the program.
You know what? It's an arbitrary decision made at the beginning of a game's development cycle, and there's absolutely no point to ever changing it unless you are using a proprietary language that no longer works.
Or you're porting it. I mean, that's about
the right. Idea. So, but I mean, once you ship, there's no reason to change it.
Yeah.
At conservatives, politicians really need to keep their noses out of the games industry. People seem to love to scapegoat, as Paul pointed out. Everything has been blamed except the actual causes of these problems. They don't seem to understand the issue and rather point fingers or sweep it under the rug. The fact that we have cosplaying women getting assaulted at cons to YouTubers getting death threats means we have a problem here. It's not the games, it's how we are behaving as a society as a whole. So yes, I pity this woman for not having enough self-reflection on what's going on around her. At Violent Video Games for Ice Cream, what do they think, we're all eight or something? Again, another story of a group of people who are not really fully aware of the situation and what's causing the problem.
By the way, they do also, as an alternative, give you GameStop credit. But, you know, I think you'd get more of your value getting the ice cream than giving your used game to GameStop.
Yeah, and not for nothing, you could usually get more for your money on eBay, especially if it's like a long time out of print.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the last time I looked for System Shock? It was like $25.
Well, even the newer games, I mean, you could probably get, say, $30 if you wanted to sell Destiny on eBay.
Yeah. At games streaming, I don't much like this idea either. I agree that having a feeling of ownership over the game is what I like. At the question of the week, so long as bonus content is small stuff like soundtracks or some character skin, it's fine. A lot of times these pre-order bonuses are never attainable otherwise, and I've had the feeling of an incomplete game if I am missing out on a feature. Also, I don't like the price, the piecemeal feeling of it all being diced up. I just got the full Wasteland 2, and the startup screen has a joke about DLC with this robot thing and $60 for it.
I did not see that. I have to pay more attention about the startup screen because I did not see that joke.
You don't pay attention to startup screens anyway.
I'll next time I boot up Wasteland, I'll look for it. From Arthur V at Microcraft, I don't really see a problem here. It's just successful business. I think Microsoft knows better than to mess with the much beloved brick stacking formula and will just throw money its way. As for Notch, the guy should be respected. It takes a real leader to care for his employees. At Back to the Stone Age, for fear of choking on my own malice, I will restrain myself from writing too much on the subject. This woman has a belief and has every right to express it, but attacking other groups for their beliefs is politics, undermining her claims. Telling women not to play games is much like saying to an Afro-Caribbean football player subjected to racial abuse to leave sports, a huge European issue. I disagree with her opinion. Yeah, just so you know, for us Americans who don't know what he's referring to, soccer has been dealing with a lot of racism in the past 20 years. And it's still a strong issue. And there's a lot of anti-racism programs going on. If you ever watch TV in Europe, you'll probably see it, one of those. What do they call them again? Those ads, public service ads about mm-hmm. fighting racism in soccer. So, at Violent Games will make you cream. Ha ha ha. This initiative would be good in the UK, as the price of Ben and Jerry's here is atrocious. Still, I don't see the point of their argument. In a country that is proud to send its young men to shoot foreigners, attacking violent video games sounds hypocritical and pointless. It's not like it'll prevent the young from being exposed to the violent medium. At the question of the week, I pre-ordered quite a few games in my time, mostly multiplayer games, but I never let the bonus DLC dictate where or how I order them. I get the game where it is cheapest or most convenient. I don't bother with any fancy special editions. As to me, the disc is what's important, and the extra feely is not worth my limited resources. Unless it's
I kind of agree. I almost never am satisfied when I get the extra thingy from the special edition. Like, I was just thinking about it the other day. I got BioShock's Infinite special edition, and I've got a keychain that looks like one of the, you know, power-up bonuses. I'm like, what the hell do I want this for?
I don't know. I mean, Call of Duty at one point gave away night vision glasses, goggles, and also later on a 1080p video camera.
Yeah, but if you want night vision goggles, you could probably get ones that are better quality or less money.
Anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. We're having a gaming history, and this one I did for Paul because I saw the item and I said, you know, Paul will enjoy commenting on this. And the gaming history has everything to do with Zelda. And it is 9 rumors people believed about the Legend of Zelda games that were totally fake.
You're trying to make me have an aneurysm, aren't you?
Why was it giving you an aneurysm?
Okay, I'm ready. Hit me.
Okay.
For anyone who doesn't know this, I purposely make it a point of not reading the copy before we record the show, just so you can get my pure, unadulterated responses to the news. So this is gonna be interesting. As I take my last sip of water for the next half hour.
I'm gonna read these out, and you can give your perspective on it, since there might be some references that only people who played Zelda might get. So you could also explain it if it gets a little confusing.
All right, I'm ready.
The first rumor. You can get the Triforce in Ocarina of Time. According to the many, many versions of this rumor, there are about a million ways that the magic triangle can be unearthed. One says you need to collect 100 Skulltulas without dying. Another claims you have to learn the fake Overture of Sages. Yet another talks about how using a bomb here and catching some fish there will totally lead you to the Triforce somehow. None of these methods work, and a look at the game's text file shows that even if you could find it, Link was never programmed to actually pick it up.
Yep. Did you? Not true.
did you hear this rumor? So getting the Triforce and what is the significance of getting the Triforce in any Zelda game for one? I mean, much less the Ocarina of Time.
Well, I mean, in the original, it was, you know, the 8-piece key that let you go into the final dungeon. You know, but yeah, I mean, the most common version of this myth that I heard was that it was the prize for killing the spiders, the Skulkatas, because it never told you how many there were or what you would get when you killed them all. It was just a bunch of rupees.
So why is the Triforce in the Ocarina of Time? I mean,
it's an art asset. It's a really easy to produce art asset.
All right, but why wasn't it in terms of story wise? I mean, why was it not included? I guess you're not fighting Ganon or something.
Because it's up on the wall. It's right there.
Oh, okay.
It's like it's just part of the temple.
Okay. Number two, the Triforce is in a secret pyramid level. I'm going to say that again. Number two, the Triforce is in a secret pyramid level in the desert. Here, fans are chasing the silhouette of a pyramid in the Gerudo Desert, once said to lead to measurable wealth and a certain gold triangle. But alas, while it can be seen, it cannot be reached because it isn't actually a pyramid at all. A little credit to the rumor mongers, the shape of the pyramid is definitely there, seen through the walls of Sandy Wynd when you play the Song of Storms. However, the pyramid isn't actually a structure at all, but part of a map boundary that is highlighted during the lightning strikes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's just a glitch in the art asset.
Yeah. Number three, and I'm pretty sure you heard this one. Nintendo is going to remake Wind Waker to look like Twilight Princess and make it a pre-order bonus. Oh, we're cycling back to pre-order bonuses again, see? Wind Waker was a bit of a divisive game due to no small part of its cartoony art style. The look doesn't seem to have held it back much, but still many fans wish for a graphically grown-up version. Electronic Gaming Monthly knows this well and mercilessly exploited it by telling readers that a visually revamped Wind Waker was set as a pre-order bonus for Twilight Princess. And they told this on April Fools. Rather than apologize when the gag was exposed, EGM twisted a knife. In their next issue, they printed letters from infuriated fans that fell for the joke, mocking them for believing anything anyone says on April 1st. So you remember this rumor, right?
No, I never heard this one. You know what? I've got to say, I've never had a problem with
the art,
with Wind Waker's toon cell shading, just because each one is supposed to be its own unique gameplay experience. So I mean, that's kind of like if we expect every Disney movie to have the same visual style.
I'll tell you why this happened, because at that time, if I remember correctly, one of the sequels of Soul Calibur had Link for one of the Nintendo machines, and everybody wanted every Legend of Zelda game to have that Link in it.
Right.
You know, the badass textured Link, basically.
This is another thing that I've said before, but I still think of Link as being the brown-haired dude from the 80s cartoon.
Well, excuse me.
And if you say that again, I'm just gonna talk right over you because you're an idiot. She was 6-year-olds. That was common gold. God damn it.
See, that's the banter that people want.
I don't even want to talk to you.
Number four.
When you're five, that's funny, okay?
Number four. There's a place called the Unicorn Fountain hidden in Zora's Domain. The hardest rumors to shake are the ones that have the tiniest grain of truth to them, like the tale of the Unicorn Fountain. Once upon a time in 1999... Nintendo released a disc peripheral called the 64DD that never took off, and all the expansions made for it were canceled within 2 years. That included an addition to the Ocarina of Time called Ura Zelda, which was set to contain the Unicorn Fountain. The fountain went down the pipes, and with the rest of the update, but it hasn't stopped fans from looking for it and looking and looking and looking. Some resourceful players have pinned down the spot where they say Link would have accessed the fountain beneath the waterfall in Zora's Domain. However, what lies below the surface is a dead-end gap.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that you can find when things get canceled. It's like a blocked-off doorway or some place that you could almost possibly reach if only there was one more stepping stone there.
So, yeah, Nintendo is obviously planning for that expansion. So the place to get to it is there, but you can't do it because it'll never be unlocked.
Yeah, and you know what? I forget which Zelda it was, but like you could see, like, I mean, that's how you could tell, you know, when they cut content in Ganon's fortress one of the times. Maybe it was even Wind Waker, although it was more likely Twilight Princess. Like, you just get to one chamber, and it looks like there should be like nine something doors there leading out of this circular room, and there's only like two.
Yeah. Okay, number five. You can beat the Running Man in Ocarina of Time. It doesn't matter, you say, or at least should you say to yourself when you agree to race with a Running Man. He's always a little bit too quick for you and finishes the race from Gerudo Valley to Kokiri Forest faster than you ever could. It doesn't matter, really. It doesn't matter. Ah, fuck that guy. While some of us drown our rage against this marathon, many self-destructively attacking chickens, others aren't willing to accept defeat. They know deep in their heart containers there must be a way to defeat him, but there isn't. The game's own code supports the debunkers, since there's no prize for winning and no dialogue written for victory condition. And this is the funniest part. Those who have managed to complete the race in 0 seconds by using the debug menu have met with defeat themselves, as the Running Man will have completed the race in -1 seconds.
That's right. The game code specifically says that he will always finish 1 second faster than you.
So tell us about this Running Man, some background about it, because apparently...
It's, you know what, in all Zelda games, you're constantly looking for that one extra clue to find the heart container, and in later editions, you know, the piece of the heart container, and unless you go up and look at them online, like, you could just see opportunities for it everywhere. So this is the kind of thing that, like, you just feel it in your bones that, like, you just have to, like, why would it be here? You just have to be able to get the last heart container piece this way.
Wait, so he's just there to he's just a red herring?
He's just there to screw with you. Yeah, it's just a red herring. Like, you, like, narratively, you never beat him, but you do win, like, the top prize while he still beats you.
Yeah. Number six, there's a sky temple in Ocarina of Time. Damn it, Rauru? You couldn't you be like all the other sages and get locked away in your own temple and wait for Link to finish his 7-year nap? You're entirely to blame for the Sky Temple rumors, which started when fans tried to figure out where exactly the Sage of Light came from. Maybe they were a bit hasty deciding that the temple was for real and that a certain three-sided object could be found there. Again, with the Triforce, huh? Without proof, without any proof whatsoever. But you should know better than to taunt them. So... who is this guy, and why are people looking at him? What's the significance of this?
I would imagine that there's probably, if I remember correctly, there's six temples in Ocarina of Time. The seventh wise man just kind of like, oh, hey, whatever. You don't have to, like, go through some massive trial in order to save me. I'm right here. So you know what? It's entirely possible that at one point in the design process, it was like, oh, seven dungeons for seven sages. And then they just kind of cut that, you know, a few months in. So I could see why the rumor is there.
So I assume he's a Sage of Light and there are other sage of other things.
Right. Like the Zora princess is the Sage of Water and she's got to, you know, you got to go save her.
Oh,
water,
so that's why I would say it's a sky temple because he's a Sage of Light.
There right.
Must be in the air. Okay.
Right. And it could have been true at one time, but you got to remember, you know, these games don't just make themselves. Resources have to be devoted to each and everything. And if there's not enough money to go around, stuff gets cut.
Number seven, you can break into Phaedo's house in Twilight Princess. While there's no indication in Twilight Princess that Phaedo's house is accessible or even interesting enough to bother trying to get in, some fans are just too curious to let it go. This led to rumors that it really could be done if you just knew the trick. A lot of rumors started out weren't even started out of genuine interest, but by jokesters intent on crushing their fellow players' dreams of virtual home invasion. It was eventually discovered that you could get into the house technically, but only by glitching through the door and into the uncoded void beyond and breaking the game. So in other words, you went inside a place where you weren't supposed to go and there was nothing there and the game just crashed.
I personally think Twilight Princess is one of the least interesting Zelda games.
Who the hell is Phaedo anyway? Why is he?
I don't even remember.
Oh, okay. He looks like a goofy guy in the photo. Okay.
Don't even remember.
Number eight, you could get phantom arrows by killing the phantom guide. You know, there are arrows made of silver, magical ice, or pure life-giving light. But, you know, it would be really cool? Arrows made out of ghosts. So, yeah, that's pretty much how the phantom arrows rumor in Ocarina of Time shook out. And it ended about as well as you expected. While different versions of the rumor changed details here and there, the basic concept remains consistent. First, you have to catch all the Big Poe ghosts floating around Hyrule Field. Then you have to...
Oh, that just sounds exhausting.
Then you have to find the Phantom Guide in the Haunted Wasteland, re-kill him, visit the Poe Collector in Hyrule, and then profit? As you can probably guess, there's no proof that these things ever existed, and if anybody's successfully obtained them, they've been quiet about it. All that you really have are arrows imbued with flesh-rending ice and fire. So, Big Poe ghosts? I mean, how many of them are there?
See, here's the thing. Like I was saying before about the money, if there was going to be a special different kind of arrow that there was conceivably enough money for, there'd also have to be enough money for places to use it within the game. Hmm. So if you can't spot where those might be, or that those weren't rolled over into the existing fire or ice arrows, then it's just made up bullshit.
And the final one, number 9, there's going to be a Zelda game set in the future. Unlike EGM, which actually tried to make it Zelda-inspired April Fool's at least some kind of believable, the fine folks at WeTV went on the exact opposite direction, using one of the least convincing fake trailers ever made rating Google for images. They actually got people to believe that there would be a futuristic Zelda game that was in the works, particularly after Miyamoto hinted that Twilight Princess would be the quote-unquote the last of its kind. The charade was exposed pretty quickly by people none too happy about the Google's image rating, but people kept believing it for some time, and some still swear by it 6 years later.
Yeah, I wouldn't...
Well, here's the thing. This is the sort of thing that could become true, but not because of this rumor. I mean, you know, Nintendo...
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
Run out of ideas.
Not that there would be one set in the future. Like, but kind of, aren't they? We know what happens in the future of one of the timelines. It's Wind Waker. You know, we know that in one of the futures, one of the three possible futures.
I mean, I think when they're talking about future, I think they're talking about dystopic sci-fi future with robots and stuff.
No, we're not going to break genre. I mean, screw that. You don't fuck with a good formula, frankly. So what? Link's going to run around with a machine gun? Yeah, this is sounding more and more like bad slash fiction.
Or you could just have a sword made of light.
Yeah, this is sounding more and more like bad slash fiction.
Yeah, but still.
You want a lightsaber? Go play a Star Wars game.
Here's the thing. You know that someone at Nintendo may bring this up, and at some point they're going to be deluded enough to say, hey, this is a good idea. You know, and it'll be probably quickly forgotten. You know, like the
and that person will find himself on the unemployment line.
Yeah, like those disc games. TDI, PDI. You know, for Zelda and Mario that were
The Philips CGI.
The CDI, yeah, the CDI games. You know, they'll probably be quickly forgotten like that. Anyway, that was our Zelda rumors gaming history.
Give me an embolism.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. Well, come on. You didn't enjoy listening to the Zelda rumors?
I think you gave me a new ulcer.
Why would it give you an ulcer?
Because, I mean... some of them are just so far beyond the realm of plausibility.
Yeah, but you know, you always have those urban legends about games. I mean, that reminds me of the Battlezone one in which you could reach the volcano in the background and you can enter it.
Dude, all you have to do is move Link's dresser in A Link to the Past and you can, you know, run through a secret door there and totally play the entire first Zelda.
But you see, the thing is that Nintendo loves to hide the original version of their games and stuff. I mean, that's the entire reason to play Animal Crossing for a lot of people, was to unlock the original games in that game, you know. And also, you know, Nintendo has something to do with it because, you know, warp zones. I mean, they invented them. So I'm pretty sure they think there's going to be warp zones to everything. I mean, I'm pretty sure there are warp zone rumors about Mario, too.
But, I mean, if you're gonna buy into a rumor, ask yourself, is this at all in the realm of possibility,
and also,
given what Paul has taught me about game design?
And also check the date. If it's April 1st, you might want to be a little skeptical.
I mean, that's the other thing too, but I kind of think that goes without saying.
Yeah, so that's going to be our question of the week, actually. What rumor did you actually fall for? in the past. So let me ask you, did you fall for a rumor?
I never fall for rumors, but I do still to this day, even though we know how the series ends, I am still a firm believer in the Harry Potter, Ron Weasley is our king theory, which is very popular around the time of book number 5.
But that's speculation. That's not a rumor.
That's a theory. No. It's true. It's true. Weasley's our king. He came back in time, and that's the whole thing. Mm. It says so right there. It says so right there in the first book. In the chess game, yes, it's all right there. Weasley is our king.
Yeah, I never...
Yeah, you guys need to go look that up online. It's one of the better rumors. It's one of the better theories out there.
Yeah. I've started rumors. I've never really... Because whenever I hear a rumor, I usually Google it and see how many people are reporting that rumor. You know, if a lot of people are reporting it, then I start, you know, paying attention to it. But yeah.
you just like to start shit.
No, the thing is, you know, I don't like possibilities. I like it right in front of me. You know, it's like I don't want to hear about what might be. I want to see it in front of me right now. I don't like waiting. You know, I mean, okay. The rumor. Okay, I have one. That the constant thing that Fallout 4 is going to be announced. And the problem with that is, at some point, Fallout 4 is going to be announced. So, but it's going to be announced at this coming E3. It's going to be announced at this coming E3 at this event, you know. And Bethesda still hasn't done it yet. So yeah, that's my rumor that I keep falling for is the Fallout 4 rumors. So let us know what rumors you always that you have fallen for in the past, and we will see you next week.
Bye, Bonds.
Because while Paul tries to drink some milk to get rid of his current ulcer now.
An embolism. Oh, and congratulations to the successful launch of Disney Infinity 2.0 today. Go you guys.
Okay. So we will see you next week.
Bye, Bonds.